Good morning. I'm Frederick County Executive Jan Gardner, and I guess I should change that and say good afternoon, but I usually do these in the morning. Thank you for joining us for today's public information briefing. Today, I'll provide an update and some related information on COVID-19 in Frederick County. So as we approach the holiday season, we do so with a mix of feelings. Joy for our traditional holiday season, along with uncertainty and trepidation about the surge in the virus. We know that this December won't be like any we've experienced before. From wearing masks while we're out to watching Advent services and other religious services online, and with tree lighting ceremonies, the Kris Kringle Parade, and other holiday gatherings canceled. This year will certainly be different. Yet our wonderful, caring community has come up with new and creative ways to spread some joy. There are some great, unique ideas for you and your family to enjoy safely. Announced yesterday was the 25 Days of Frederick, put together by Visit Frederick, which is the Tourism Council, and our economic development partners. There's something you can do every day to both share some joy and to support our local businesses. For information, you can go to visitfrederick.org/25-days-of-frederick. So there's a hyphen between those words. You can take a stroll along Carroll Creek and you can see the festive display of brightly lit and decorated boats. Or you can have a family-friendly outdoor scavenger hunt, which you could set up yourself, or you could do the downtown partnerships Operation Sparkle scavenger hunt. And you can find the details for that on the Downtown Frederick Partnership webpage. And tomorrow is the last day, December 4th, that you can sign up your child to receive a letter from Santa. And that's another great idea, sponsored by Frederick County Parks and Recs. And you can find out about that by going to recreator.com. So there's more things I could share, but do a little bit of an internet search, and you'll come up with some really creative online activities or outdoor activities that may be safe for you and your family. So my goal today is to provide you with facts and updates about the health pandemic, just as I have done throughout the past 9 months. So we have been in this for 9 months now. And the goal is so that you can make informed choices about how to protect yourself, your family, and your coworkers from coronavirus. Now, as the governor said earlier this week, it is about personal responsibility, and we do need everyone to do their part. And so, as the governor says, wear the damn mask. Everybody is repeating that. We really think it's important and simple for people to do. Now, while I know many Frederick County residents, most of them, are following the health directives and precautions, we do have some in our community who choose not to do so. And they are risking not only their health, but the health of others around them. So wearing masks works best when everybody does it. So please, I'm encouraging everyone to stay home as much as possible, to telework if you can and as much as you can, to wear a face covering or mask when you're out in public places, to physical distance from others, and to practice good hygiene, which means washing your hands. These remain our best defense against the virus. So I know people are weary, I'm personally weary, but we are facing our last big battle against the virus. We know that there's a vaccine on the horizon, but it's going to be months till we get there. We need to hunker down now and do our part to protect our healthcare workers, our first responders, our frontline workers, those employees out in our grocery stores, for instance, and to reduce the impact on our hospital. Now, without a doubt, Frederick County is experiencing a second wave of COVID-19, and it appears it's going to get worse before it gets better. The number of new cases has steadily increased over the past month, and it shot up like a rocket this week, with a record number of new cases in one day yesterday, where we had 174 new positive cases of COVID. So we've had a few days over 100, but to go to 174 was shocking to me. Today was 126. Now, a month ago, I highlighted our first day of 50 new cases since June. So today I'd be happy if I could say we were still at 50 new cases a day. So over the past week, Frederick County has averaged about 115 new cases a day. And our new cases per day has more than doubled over the last month. Now, why does this matter? A certain percentage of all the new cases need hospitalization care. Now, you can debate what that percentage is. Some people might say it's 10 or 20%. Others might say it's 6%. I've heard different percentages. But whatever that percent is, if you multiply it by the number of new cases, you're going to get more hospitalizations. Now, all of our health metrics are moving in the wrong direction and seem to be doing so rather quickly. Our positivity rate stands at 8.1%. I believe today is the first day we are above 8%, and we are now above the statewide average. Our seven-day rolling average of new cases per 100,000 population is currently at 37.54, also higher than the state average, and it's about triple from where we were last month. Hospitalizations for COVID are as high or slightly higher than what we experienced in the spring at the peak of our first surge, where I think in our first surge, our peak was around 35, 36, 37 hospitalizations. And we expect, and quite frankly, I fear that hospitalizations will continue to rise both here and across the state. Now, our hospital and our healthcare workers are facing a daunting challenge, and they certainly need our help and support, and they need the help and support of everyone in our community. We need to do our part to protect these frontline healthcare workers and our first responders who are directly exposed and are putting themselves and, by extension, their families in harm's way. We need to do our part so they can do theirs, and that's to keep us safe and to take care of people who need care. And we support them most by, again, doing our part, staying home as much as possible, working from home, wearing face coverings and following all the health directives, and honoring the limitations, restrictions, and regulations that have been advanced by our public health officials and by the governor. Today's hospitalizations are at 37. On Thanksgiving, there were 39 members of our community who were hospitalized and did not get to celebrate Thanksgiving because they were in the hospital. So while we are seeing better outcomes for many patients, and certainly we know a lot more about how to treat patients than we did in the spring, and there are some better therapies, there have been 8 deaths in the last 2 weeks in Frederick County. That's 8 deaths since 11/15. And these deaths, for the most part, have not been associated with nursing homes. I don't know where the 2 deaths we reported today came from. But, you know, in the spring, a lot of our deaths were affiliated with nursing homes. And while we are, again, seeing some outbreaks in our nursing homes, we have testing and PPE and infection control in place that we did not have in the spring. So that I'm not going to tell you there won't be any kind of fatalities related to nursing homes, but nursing homes are in a much better position than they were in the spring. Now, every single death means another family is grieving. Another friend is lost, a family member is lost, another seat at the table will be empty for upcoming holidays. Our firefighter and EMS crews are transporting a high number of COVID-positive patients to the hospital. You know, we saw these numbers go way down over the summer. Yesterday, EMS transported 9 suspected COVID-positive patients and 6 were confirmed to have COVID-19. Now, these statistics are actually higher than those we experienced in the first surge in the spring. And we do have 9 firefighters who have tested positive, and we have about 25 or so others who are quarantined due to possible exposure. So we are seeing the impact of this. So we must take action to help keep our healthcare system functional and safe. So I'm really begging you and urging all Frederick County residents to do your part. We really need everyone to do their part. So when you look at the data, it's clear that we have sustained community spread in Frederick County and throughout the entire state of Maryland. You can track new cases and hospitalizations and other data, which I certainly do every day, on the county website at the county's dashboard, which is frederickcountymd.gov/covidstats. And these numbers are updated every day around 10 a.m. There is a dashboard for statewide statistics, too, and they can be found at coronavirus.maryland.gov. And I will say that I look at those pages. You can overlay some what's happening in some other counties to see how we compare with our surrounding counties. And there is a mix of comparisons, but it's interesting information. The state site also includes information on outbreaks in schools across the state, both public and private, as well as nursing homes and assisted living centers. We have nursing homes on our county page as well. Information about these congregate settings is updated each week on Wednesday. In Frederick County, we do have one private school that is experiencing some cases. They've had 6 positive cases on December 2nd. We do have 11 Frederick County nursing homes and assisted living centers that are experiencing an outbreak. And an outbreak means one person. It could be a staff person or a resident, a patient in a nursing home. And again, I do want to say the nursing homes are in a better position than they were before, but they're still a high-risk location. So last week, Governor Hogan renewed the state of emergency in Maryland. That means everybody should continue to stay home as much as possible, avoid crowds, wear their face coverings, stay 6 feet apart, and wash hands frequently. And again, simple steps to keep us safe while trying to keep our economy running at least at some level. So again, I know everyone's tired of wearing masks and limiting their contact with others, but we have to stay vigilant. This, again, is our last big battle against the virus. We do have light at the end of the tunnel, even though it may be a few months off, and it will take a while for the public to be vaccinated, and we'll certainly need their cooperation for that. But I want you to consider this. It took 8 months for Frederick County to record 5,000 cases of the coronavirus. We hit that 5,000 number about a month ago. In the months since, our case count has increased by almost 50%, and we're now at 7,000 cases. As of today, we were at 7,249 cases. Now, when I saw in the middle of November a projection of 7,000 cases on and around December 1st, I thought that is not going to be possible. We'd have to have an average of about 100 cases. But here we are. That was true. And again, I share this not to scare people, but again, to have a basis of facts and reality about why we're doing what we're doing. And I do want to make sure everybody can understand why we have precautions in place. That's why we limited gatherings of all kinds. Holiday parties, unfortunately, should be canceled this year or put on hold so that we can be around to celebrate in the future. Now, Frederick County's Board of Health met recently, and I want to clarify what the Board of Health did and what the Board of Health didn't do. There's been a lot of information out there that has been inaccurate, much of it on Facebook or social media. But the Board of Health is led by our health officer, Dr. Brookmeyer, and it consists of the members of the County Council and myself as the County Executive. So here's what the Board of Health decided. They decided to include in their resolution a restatement of the governor's mask mandate, which he issued on October 16th. That was not something new. That was already in place. It is statewide. We agreed with it, but certainly I have some people asking us to overrule that, and we can't overrule the governor. We are simply following it and encouraging people to do so. The Board of Health also limited indoor and outdoor gatherings, not part of a normal business operation, to 25 people or fewer. And again, that was a governor's directive, but we put it into regulation in our county. We know that gatherings are really some of the high-risk things that are happening in our community where we see spread. So we're really trying to encourage people not to have those celebrations and those gatherings this year because they are high-risk for spread. We also added some limitations to wedding venues, many of which were already part of a Board of Health directive from the state, but we put them into our regulation. We limited fitness centers and gyms to 25% occupancy or capacity. All other businesses, large and small, remain at the limitations and restrictions defined through the governor's executive order. Retail, restaurants, grocery stores, religious services, and many other businesses and activities are limited to 50% of capacity. They were limited by the governor. The Board of Health didn't change those. Some people felt we changed those. We did not do that. So nothing that the Board of Health did, in fact, impacted those businesses. And all of them have some unique operational limitations that came out from the Secretary of Health or from the governor in an executive order that pertain to how those operations can be managed in a way that reduces risk. Now, we've also heard assertions that the big box stores are being treated differently than small businesses and that small businesses are actually being targeted, and that's simply inaccurate. All grocery stores, retail, large and small, is limited to 50% of capacity, and it is being actively enforced by the county. Now, every elected official and health official across the state is trying to balance the spread of the virus and the impacts on public health with economic health, mental health, and the variety of hardships that people and businesses and organizations are experiencing in our community. And it is a difficult balance to strike. Maybe the most important action that the Board of Health took was adding the ability for our inspectors and others to assess fines to encourage compliance. And again, most people, many people, and businesses are complying. But we do have some who are chronically refusing to comply, and it is those people where the fines would be used to try to encourage compliance. Now, the county and the health department have hired additional people to help do enforcement for gathering size, for the mask mandate, for all these business limitations that are out there, most of them coming from the governor. And the governor has asked counties to do this enforcement. They've actually, you know, asked us to have meetings. They've really given us a lot of pressure to do the enforcement. So the health department is also utilizing trained inspectors from partner agencies, such as the liquor inspectors, building and permitting inspectors. And again, the goal is to help educate businesses, customers, and others, and to seek corrective action. Because we do think if we could get everybody to do these things, it would make a huge difference. Now, no one likes the business limitations or, quite frankly, enjoys doing enforcement. But the collective goal, again, is to keep our community safe and our economy opened at some level. Now, I've actually heard from business owners who have advocated for enforcement. They will say, we are doing our part, some other business similar to ours is not, and we don't need added regulations, we need enforcement of the existing regulations. So that is really the focus of what we're trying to do. So we owe it to our small business owners to follow the rules so that they can maintain their businesses during this time and be able to thrive again in the future. So anyone who has questions or concerns about a business can call a special phone line at the health department. It's on your screen. It's 301-600-6200. You can also send an email to FCHD, which is Frederick County Health Department, businessinfo@frederickcountymd.gov. And I will say the number of compliance complaints I have received in the last week or so have been high. And so we are, again, trying to not add more rules and regulations, but to have everybody follow what's already out there. And I appreciate that it can be confusing. And if you wonder what the rules and regulations are, you can find them on frederickcountymd.gov/coronavirus. We've posted all the local and state directives on that page. So again, I'm encouraging everyone to remain vigilant, to wear their mask, and to be at least 6 feet from other people. And we are encouraging people to do both, not one or the other, but to do both. And we want you to make sure that you avoid gatherings with people who don't live in your household. And again, we need everybody to do their part. There is hope on the horizon with the vaccines. Again, we're facing our last great battle, in my opinion, against the virus. We are not helpless. We have some control over this. We can't control our destiny by following these rules and regulations, and we can win against the virus. So again, don't let your guard down. Now, I do want to report on a couple other things. One of the ways Frederick County has supported our business community has been by providing a variety of grants. And we have provided between $9 and $10 million worth of grants to our business community, from our Jumpstart grants to our Fired Up grants to our childcare grants to our restaurant grants. So we started with $5 million in Jumpstart grants in the early summer for our businesses and our farmers. And that was followed by about $2 million in childcare grants, which we did over two rounds. The first round was about $1.4 million, which was awarded in August, and another $685,000 was awarded right before Thanksgiving. The amount that each center received in the second round was customized based on the size of the center and the number of months they were eligible for. So round two statistics includes grants to 211 family child care providers, 23 child care providers with centers of 59 or fewer students, and 36 child care providers with 60 or more. Now, the child care grants, I've really had a lot of feedback from that. They really have helped child care operations to stay in business. I mean, I've heard from about 50 of these businesses how meaningful the grant was to them. Now, as soon as that grant closed, we opened grants for our food service establishments or restaurants, but also caterers, bakeries, and food trucks, and our craft beverage establishments. Now, some of them had taken advantage of the Fired Up grants, the outdoor heaters, and the propane fuel, so we could extend the outdoor dining season a bit. And I will say, when I came in here today at the lunch hour, I did see a few people dining outside today, because once you get to the middle of the day, it's still pretty nice out. But these grants for our restaurant food service really reached a wider group of food service and hospitality industries. So today I want to announce the results of those food service grants. So we will be awarding over $2 million in grants to more than 200 businesses that are in two different tiers or categories. The first tier includes caterers, carry-out restaurants with no seating, bakeries, and food trucks. There are 5 bakeries, 7 caterers, 22 carry-out restaurants, and 9 food trucks that qualified in this category. These eligible businesses will each receive a grant of $4,397. The second group includes restaurants with seating, as well as wineries, breweries, and distilleries. We received applications from 19 craft beverage businesses and 144 restaurants. Each of those eligible applicants will receive $14,748. So you may wonder why those numbers are so unusual, okay? And it's because we took the entire amount of money that was budgeted and we divided it among the applicants so that we could give all of it out. So many of these businesses will be able to stay in operation longer thanks to these grant funds, and they will be deposited directly into the bank accounts of these businesses. Now, I looked through the list of people who were awarded or businesses that were awarded grants, and I'm pleased to say that we did have food service and restaurants establishments from all around the county, from Emmitsburg to Brunswick to Middletown to Newmarket. And we really tried to get the word out, and it appears we were successful with that. I want to thank the county's grants team, which has done an amazing job throughout the pandemic for all these grant programs. And again, these were things that the county government did that were in addition to everybody's normal job. So our Office of Economic Development, who processed all of these grant applications, our finance division, who does all of the financial work, transfer of money, and accounting for all of these, and our interagency information technologies employees, who have really helped make all these portals available so that people can do online applications. And I will say, people have worked long hours, nights and weekends, to really try to support our businesses, our child care providers, and people who have been able to access grants. So I do want to remind people that who are experiencing economic hardship from the pandemic that we are offering help to individual people, too. We have rental assistance, food assistance, legal aid to help avoid eviction, among other assistance programs. Our emergency rental assistance program will help renters to stay in their homes and help landlords who might otherwise not see income from their tenants. The rental assistance program remains open to help Frederick County residents with rent. And if you're unable to pay your rent at any point because of COVID, please reach out to the Religious Coalition for Emergency Human Needs, who's managing the rental assistance program. The county partnered with them and the City of Frederick to provide more than $3 million to help prevent evictions related to the pandemic. So you can find details online at www.rcehn.org. You can email covidhelp@rcehn.org. You can call 301-631-2670, extension 127, or if you need Spanish, extension 128. Now, I do want to remind people, because I've had some emails from citizens on this week, that there is a prohibition on evictions. It still remains in place. The governor extended the order from October to prohibit evictions when the tenant can demonstrate that there is a loss of income due to COVID. And so until the state of emergency is terminated and the catastrophic health emergency is rescinded, no court shall give judgment for possession or repossession or warrant of restitution of possession or repossession of residential, commercial, or industrial real property if the tenant can demonstrate to the court through documentation or other verifiable means that they have suffered a loss of income due to COVID. So I have some people who have said that they are facing eviction, and the prohibition remains with proof. If you need food assistance, there are 83 different food distribution sites in the county with varying dates and times. We're actually in the process of developing an app, so you could literally put your location into the app and it will tell you where food distribution can be done near you. In the meantime, you can find some information at marylandfoodbank.org @find/food. So that's mdfoodbank.org/find-food. Now I want to turn it over to Dr. Brookmeyer, who is going to talk about planning for vaccinations and vaccines and maybe a few other things. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Brookmeyer.
Thank you. Thank you, County Executive Gardner. Today I do have some, good news. And so with my first slide, I will cover what some people might have heard about in the news yesterday, is that the CDC has modified the duration for quarantine, and that's based on information that they have been able to research and evaluate with all the persons who have been identified as contacts of persons who test positive. They've looked to see, well, once people have been exposed to someone who is positive, about how long does it take for them to develop illness, if they're going to develop illness? And the quarantine period, as the listeners might recall, has been set at 14 days. And now with a review of additional data that's come in, the CDC has reduced that time period, and it's a little bit complicated here. And that's why I've got the slide to try to simplify it. But again, even if you can put it into four bullets, it doesn't mean that it's actually easy to understand. But it does potentially reduce the quarantine period. That's the time period from which someone was potentially exposed to someone who was infectious, from 14 days. Potentially it could go down to 7 days for persons, but the provision is that the individual has no symptoms themselves and that they had a test for COVID that was specimen was collected at least by day 5 or later in the illness. And if that's the case and the test is negative at day 7, the quarantine period could end. For persons who don't get tested, 10 days is now the time period at which the quarantine can end if they don't have a test and if they don't have symptoms. However, as we're still evaluating the information, it's still recommended, though, that if persons do end their quarantine before 14 days from their last potential exposure, that they continue to monitor themselves for the signs and symptoms. And it bears repeating that the signs and symptoms are pretty general ones that we find. People often say, oh, I thought it was my allergies, and instead, and they're telling us that because they had tested positive and asking, did you have symptoms? They say, well, I had assumed it was my allergies, so many of the symptoms are easily identified by people as being due to something else when it turns out that it coincides with a recent infection that they've had. But anyway, so I wanted to let all of you know it. This is new today. The Department of Health in Maryland has issued this guidance following suit with the CDC, and it will still take a few more days for the official COVID link contact tracing system to be updated to reflect these recommendations, and for the new letters that are available for persons who are identified as contacts to be available. Thank you. So next slide, please. So what I also wanted to talk about is the vaccine planning. So again, some good news is that we have hope on the horizon, and that is with the vaccine. So there's been a lot of news since I was last here talking to everybody. The first of the companies has submitted all of their documentation to the FDA, and we are waiting emergency use authorization by the FDA. The other part that we are waiting for is for the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, that's known as ACIP or ACIP. They have met and they have made their recommendations for the priority groups, and now we're waiting for the Maryland Department of Health to identify how, with the state's allocation, they will be prioritizing, and I would imagine that it's going to be in line with the ACIP's recommendations. And I'll talk about that on the next slide, but I do want to say that the vaccine planning, so besides the fact that for the health department, we had experience with the vaccine distribution back with H1N1 in 2009-2010, and we've got plans related to that. We've also been modifying our plans for the new situation with COVID and including the the unique features of the vaccine, including the cold storage and handling differences from a typical vaccine. Next slide, please. So who will receive the vaccine? And again, this is where we're waiting for the state to finalize its prioritization schedule. I would expect that it will be very similar to the CDC's recommendations. And as you're thinking about, well, who's at greatest risk for exposure and who's at greatest risk for adverse outcomes, we're looking at people who are the frontline healthcare workers. So say folks who take care of individuals who are acutely ill, like persons who work in the hospital, as well as persons who work in the long-term care facilities and the residents in those facilities. And so locally, we're continuing to talk with our partners who are involved in those communities. Next slide, please. And when will the vaccine be available? Well, the earliest would be December 14th, but maybe December 21st, hard to say. And because it has to do with when the FDA has completed their review and when they make their announcement. I understand, though, and it's been widely publicized in the media, that the company is ready to start shipping within 24 hours of the FDA making its decision. And the first, like with any manufacturing, there is an amount of material that has been produced already, but then to make the full amount that would be necessary to cover our population with vaccine, it takes some additional time. And we're still waiting to see what Maryland's allocation will be from the federal government. And then within the Maryland allocation, then there will be an allocation for the various vaccination groups, the hospital, the pharmacies that will be vaccinating long-term care facilities, and the local health departments. And then when we get additional vaccines, so some of the types of vaccine that don't require that ultra cold storage, we anticipate that that vaccine, when it's available, will be something that would be more reasonable for local doctors' offices to be able to receive and be able to also administer. And when that will be, we're looking at the spring, possibly, for that. So waiting to see. But the good news is that the first round of the vaccine is really going to be here very soon. I'm optimistic on this front. Next slide, please. And the vaccine, safe, proven, effective. It won't be mandatory, at least as far as I know, and I don't have any authority to make anything mandatory. So people don't need to send me any letters or correspondence. I don't have any role in that. But what I would say, though, is that it is important for all Marylanders to be vaccinated so that we're able to stop the spread of the virus. Because if the virus doesn't find any susceptible hosts, then if it's like other viruses, then it just disappears. So if it doesn't have susceptible hosts that it can keep spreading in, the virus itself, outside of a person, doesn't live very long. So we just need to reduce the numbers of susceptible persons coming in contact with the virus. Next slide, please. And so we are going to be asking for your input. We'll be issuing a survey. It will be coming soon, possibly as early as tomorrow. You can see the locations where we'll have that, and ask that folks spread it as well so that we can get information that will assist us with our planning to find out what Frederick County residents are thinking about the vaccine in terms of interest in it and what barriers they anticipate they might have or what questions, and some other questions that will be helpful for us in our planning. Next slide, please. So to remind everybody, though, that the vaccine, it's one of many layers to our defense mechanisms or our defenses against infection. And first of all, avoiding Potential exposures is one significant layer of protection, but then the distancing, if you are around others, and then the face coverings and the hand hygiene. So they're all various layers. And when people start to be vaccinated, we're not going to know, like say in the room here today or outside, whether we're coming in contact with someone who's been vaccinated or not. So there will still be a time period where we will be continuing with all of these protective measures. I'm looking forward, though, to the day when we can rely on vaccination as an effective strategy to continue to reduce or eliminate opportunities for the virus to spread. But for the foreseeable future, though, we will need to continue the multi-layered approach of the physical distancing, the face coverings, and the other measures that we've talked about quite often. So that's what I've got for today. Thank you for letting me share the positive news.
You're welcome. So I do want to say that the health department and the hospital have been talking about preparation for the vaccine and distribution of the vaccine for some time. We have used our CRF money to help the hospital buy one of the ultra-cold freezers so that we would have that capability for the initial vaccines that require that. And I really do want to encourage people to get the vaccine when it is available. It won't be available to everybody right away. It'll be available to healthcare workers and people at high risk initially, which certainly makes sense. But there is that hope on the horizon. I do want to thank the health department and really for their dedication and hard work. I know Dr. Brookmeyer is working around the clock to keep our community safe. Certainly, our entire county government is filled with dedicated, hardworking, and highly skilled employees, and I'm really grateful for their work and their continuation of providing essential services during this pandemic. So I want to stress that we are in Frederick County government following our own advice. We're certainly making decisions within Frederick County government to keep our employees safe. I'm asking all agencies to make sure we're at full telework. You know, some people have kind of drifted back into the office a little bit, so we're pushing people back into telework. We're going to go back to implementing alternative work shift schedules in some divisions in the next week or so. We also closed the Catoctin Creek Nature Center after Thanksgiving, which had been one of our few buildings that had been opened. And I do want to say, you know, our parks became a place where people participated in a lot of outdoor activity in terms of walking, hiking, biking, running, which I think is very important for maintaining mental health. Now, most of our parks close at sunset, which now in the winter is earlier. You know, it's like 5 o'clock most days. And so I do want to let people know that 4 of our parks are actually open till 10:30 at night. And those are Ballinger Creek Park, Othello Regional Park, Pine Cliff Park, and Utica District Park. Those parks have lights. They may have small groups on the turf fields. But if you do want to take a walk or a run, those are places you can go to get some exercise in the evening after dark hours till 10:30 p.m. So again, Ballinger Creek Park, Othello Regional Park, Pine Cliff Park, and Utica District Park. So again, the virus is real. The risk of spread is greater than it has been in the past. There's more people with it, so there's more exposure. No matter what you're out doing, there is greater risk. So it's important for everybody to, as I say, go out and shop with purpose. Go buy what you need and depart and do your business. Certainly support our local businesses, but avoid congregating with others. Now, today and this week, both the governor and I have not announced additional restrictions. We are focusing on getting you to follow what is already out there. There's been lots of confusion. And again, if everybody does our part, you know, every business is out there at 50% capacity or less. And so there's already lots of limitations and restrictions in place. And so we want people to follow the rules and to do their part. And if we can get everybody or most everybody to do that, we can try to get in front of this virus. Now, I won't say that won't change in the future, potentially, but that's where we are today. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for doing your part. Let's keep up that effort so that we can win the virus. This is our last great battle. Thank you.